This is the beginning of Class 8.
Today, we're going to start 3 weeks, or three nights of what to meditate about. Okay. To do that, you have to know that there's three kinds of meditation. These are donated by Margie, if you guys know. She found them. And you debate it with yourself. And that's called Qigong. It means analytical meditation. You have a problem with a certain point of Buddhism, or you're not sure about a certain point, and you put it in front of your mind, you put it in center stage, and you start to rip it apart. You start to think of all the reasons why or why not you can accept it or you can't accept it. And that's called Qigong. It's supposed to be that as a result of a Qigong, you can come to some conclusion. And then you do a Jogom on that conclusion.
You do what?
A Jogom. You fix on that conclusion. Like we had the five classical proofs for emptiness in the last course, you know? So this might be your process. You might do a shargom on those five. What's the first one? Emptiness of one and emptiness of many, right? And then you go through them like that. You go through the five and you keep going through the five. And you're just reviewing them. Then you do qigong. You say, why is it true that if something is empty, it must be either one thing which is empty or many things which are empty? And you debate that in your mind until you come to some conclusion, like maybe you see emptiness intellectually, and then you fix your mind on that conclusion. So that's a process that you can do. You do shargom if you're just going through the outline of a thing. You might choose to stop on one of the parts of the outline and do qigong. Okay, how do you prove that? How do you prove there's a past life? And you stop and you start to try to prove it to yourself. And when you get to some conclusion, you fix your mind on that. That's called jogom.
Yeah. Isn't Qigong kind of dangerous then? I mean, what if you come to the wrong conclusion?
There's a very interesting thing, and I'll tell you, it's very, very easy. You learn Buddhist logic, and that's what the next course is about, partly. You learn the rules for proving something. Then you pick an object to prove or disprove, and you go through all the reasons for it. if that thing is true, and if your method is correct, you must come to the correct conclusion. And that's what debating is all about. You cannot come to an incorrect conclusion if you follow the rules of logic, and the end is a true thing. Which is not, by the way, you don't start with that assumption. You start with the assumption that it could be true or false, and you attack it with logic. It's against the rules of Buddhist logic to use a reason to prove something if the person doesn't already accept that that reason applies to the object under question. For example, I can't say to you, take the sky. It's not green because it's blue. If you don't accept the fact that the sky is blue, I'm not allowed to give that proof to you. If you're a non-Buddhist and I'm trying to convince you of Buddhism, I'm not allowed to give you any proof. I'm not allowed to use any idea that you don't already accept. So really, when you see a Buddhist trying to convince somebody of something and he fails, it's because he has not followed the rules of logic. In fact, he's broken the rules of logic. So when you learn logic better, you'll be good at it. You can do it, Chenggong. Yeah.
Well, do you mean to say something that someone accepts which is already true? I mean, how can you prove to somebody something which they accept if what they accept is
true? You're also not allowed in Buddhist logic. It's a fallacy. It's a mistake of logic to try to prove something to someone when he already accepts it. Like to prove that your death is imminent, that your death is going to occur today. To prove it logically, I'm not allowed to do to Dharmakirti, because he already knows that. That's what you mean. I don't mean he accepts the conclusion, Dharmakirti, because he already knows that. That's what you mean. I don't mean he accepts the conclusion. I mean he accepts all the facts I give, which force him to draw that conclusion. So I say, in my case, I say, take the sky. It is not green, because it's blue. And you don't have to write this down, I'm just giving you an example. He doesn't believe the sky is not green. That's why I'm trying to convince him. The sky is not green because it's blue. Okay? But he must accept that the sky is blue. And he must accept that if something is blue, it can't be green. And so he's forced to accept that the sky is not green. But he hasn't seen it yet. In other words, he has all the information in his own mind. He just didn't draw the right conclusion yet. He knows the sky is blue. He knows if something is blue, it can't be green. But he has this mistaken belief that the sky is not green.
So if let's just say you're dealing with a Christian who believes in God, okay?
Yeah, you cannot start by jumping all the way up there. You have to start with some very low level things and work up to that. You have to work up to the point where he has to go, oh yeah, you're right.
So you couldn't have a debate with that person about this subject in either
no,
pro
you can.
Or con.
You can absolutely. You can say, take the world. It was not made by a compassionate living being because it has suffering.
But he disagrees with that, so that's it.
Which part?
That it was not made by a compassionate being.
Oh no, we're trying to prove that to him. Take the world.
No, you said you can't prove something to someone unless they already believe it.
Well, I'll say it again. Take the world. It was not made by a living being. Because if it were, he would have to be compassionate. Let's say that. Okay? A maker of the world should be compassionate. I'm sorry. Take the world. It was not made by a compassionate being because there is suffering.
And I'll play the devil's advocate.
No,
you're crazy. Everybody knows God's
be compassionate. I'm sorry. Take the world. It was not made by compassionate being because there is suffering.
And I'll play the devil's advocate. Everybody knows God's compassionate. What are you talking about?
No, but I'll say, I repeat it. Take the world. It was not made by compassionate being because it has suffering. It's full of suffering. Now, don't say anything yet. Does he accept that the world is full of suffering?
Yes.
Does he accept that if the world is made of suffering, the person who made it could not have been compassionate?
Not at all. No.
That we have to debate. Then I can't use that for that Christian. No, I can't. I can't use that argument. I have to go lower than that. I have to go lower.
Why don't you say that it was made by suffering? I mean.
By the way, this is a Jacob. Okay. If you want to know the answer, come to the next course. We're going to do it in the next course. So these are automatically you understand then the different objects for meditation. Mm.
These are the three objects.
These are the three kinds of meditation, and each have a different object. Okay, the classical object to start jogong. The classical object when you're trying to develop shamatha is a picture of a holy being, like a Buddha or your Root Lama or the Dalai Lama or whoever you want. Not looking at it with the eyes, but focusing on it with the mind. It's okay to go home and look at the picture for a few minutes to make sure you know what he looks like, and then you go sit down. But shamatha must be developed in the mental sense and not in the physical senses. It must be developed in conjunction with the consciousness of your thoughts and your mind, and not in conjunction with the consciousness of your senses. It can't be. Okay. So the object is, in this case, like a Buddha or something like that, or even a conclusion. If you understand emptiness, you can meditate fixedly on emptiness. Shagom, you should have an outline. You should have some kind of steps, like the nine levels of the mind, the five problems, the eight corrections, the six qualities, the six preliminary practices, the seven ingredients that those practices should have, things like that.
So that's the object?
That's a shagom.
That's a, the outline?
Yeah, the outline itself is the object. And you're going through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Let's go back again. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Let's go backwards. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's skip 5, 3, 1. And you get to, you're just jumping. You're like a person going through his musical scales if you've ever played. And that's what makes you a good improviser in music, is to do your scales for years and years. Then you're ready to improvise. Okay? That's shargo. Chegom, you take a problem. You take maybe past lives, or you take, are things empty? Or you take, was the world created? Is it true that there is not any pleasant object in this life? Things like that. Is it true that my teacher is a Buddha? Or that my Lama is a Buddha? You know, those are objects of Chegom.
Can you prove it?
Long story.
Moving on next course.
We'll talk about it. Okay. So we're going to do. I want to give you an object for your meditations. I suggest that you use it for about 6 months. I personally find that if I get tired in about 6 months of an object, and I like a personal taste. You know, I find that I'm not fresh on that object anymore after 6 months. The books say, pick an object and stick with one object until you achieve shamatha. Okay? Like a picture of a Buddha or something like that. I'm saying the object I'm going to give you is a very good object for a good shargom, and it's an outline of all the steps to get to Buddhahood. The basic necessary components of any path which claims to end your suffering. It must have certain components. If one of the components is missing, you cannot reach that goal.
And so you're saying all three of these different kinds of meditations can be shamatha or single point of concentration?
Yeah.
Meditation?
Oh, yeah. You can get shamatha in any of them. That's the point. That's the idea. But choose the most virtuous one you can. And why not the steps to Buddhahood? And I always, it's the engine theory, right? It's possible that a spiritual path which does not contain certain essential components will never work for you. Cannot work for you. Like an engine, if it's missing one necessary component, just doesn't work. It might sound great. It might look great. It might move around all over the place. But it won't move the car. Won't get you to where you're going. I just say it as a possibility, okay? You can check on it. Okay? I contend that if you don't have all of the elements that are found in the basic structure of the Lam Rim, if you don't have those in your meditation, in your practice, you cannot attain the end of suffering. Impossible. As, just as much as if one part, important part of an engine were gone, even though that spiritual path looks pretty nice, even though it seems to give some pleasant feelings in this life, even though many people are following it, if it's missing one of those components, forget it. I say it's possible that you can't reach anywhere with it. Okay, very possible. Yeah.
I thought you said that the image of the Buddha was the most virtuous, and then you said the stages of the path are most virtuous.
The image of the Buddha is the most, is the classical one. In a sense, the teachings are the Buddha.
Sort of equal.
But I'm giving you this also. The other selling point is the Lam Rim outline I'm going to give you is necessary preparation for you to take a tantric initiation. You're not allowed to take a tantric initiation without this instruction. Okay. In other words, you have to perfectly understand the outline of the open teaching before you're allowed to take a secret initiation. You're trying to take one in June. Okay. You must have this background first, and then I can go to Rinpoche and say, okay, they all heard it. And then he can pick. They say it's best if you have some realization of each of these steps, you know, personal experience of, that you've developed all these steps. And if not, well, okay, you've grasped them all thoroughly. You know, if not, well, okay, you have a pretty good idea of the outline. And that's what they say. So I would like that for the next 6 months, when you do your meditations, you're focusing on, you can do the steps of the Lam Rim like boom, 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 boom. You can do 100, 200, 300, 400. I'm picking the shortest Lam Rim in history. Okay? I'm picking a Lam Rim, okay? And I'll write it for you.
So are you saying it's equal then, or you pick an object and do the steps of the Lam Rim?
Yep. Talking practically, in case you die this week or something, two different items. Okay, Lam Rim. Say Lam Rim.
Lam Rim.
Lam Rim.
Lam Rim.
Tibetan R's are rolled like ruffles, and not when your teeth out here like the rim. Okay, rim.
Rim.
I can't do it very well. Okay. Lam means path. Rim means steps. And you see lots of different translations. Graduated path, stages of the path, graduated stages of the path, graduated, you know, there's millions of translations. It just means the steps that you must go through to reach Buddhahood and Nirvana. These are absolutely necessary steps. If one of them is left out, you won't make it. Okay? And that's what disqualifies most of the spiritual paths that are being sold today. I believe. I would say that. But you can draw your own conclusion. You can do your chingo. What's good is if you do it, if you try it, and you really do it correctly, it should give you some results after a while, a month to month to month. You should see some change in yourself and in your happiness level. And if you don't, then it's a stupid path. And give it up and do something else.
What about you, your karma is not?
Even if you've got lousy, lousy, lousy karma, okay, I would say if you sincerely practice them correctly,
no.
and I emphasize correctly, as it's taught, and you don't mix it up with something else, if you're not noticing some change in your basic level of contentment or and happiness meaning knowledgeable happiness, satisfaction level, I'd say you're either not practicing it right, or you should just quit it and go find something else before you die.
Would the same thing apply if you're doing a meditation retreat and you get stalled out? There's something going wrong?
No, it's very common in retreat to have a failed retreat. It's very common if you're a very serious practitioner to have serious problems. That doesn't mean it does mean that you did something wrong, that you should have slowed down when you were speeding up, or you shouldn't have meditated on something too heavy. Or normally that's what's happening. You didn't get the instructions to know when you're supposed to stuff. But sometimes a snake bites you in the arm, like karma bites you. So, you know, there's not much you can do. You know, okay, she blew her meditation, but she almost died.
So then what do you do in the case where you're going to blow a meditation and just start again?
It's very important to get up before you blow it out completely. They say you should leave your meditation seat with a good heart, you know, kind of happy with it. But if something goes wrong and the thing just degenerates, you know, get up. Sangdupa, uplift your mind. How?
Thank
you. So, I mean, how many people in the world are even trying to do it? You know, I mean, how many? It's one in a million. Nine. The others are, we called it last time, sheep headed for the slaughter, you know. They're just heading for death. There's no possible happy resolution to their life, period. Impossible. I met Mr. Shen yesterday. Mr. Shen is a multi-millionaire. He's 85 years old. He's blessed by incredibly good health. He's had all the money he's ever wanted in his whole life. And he's a good Buddhist. And he spent his life practicing. And what's his reward? His wife died last year of a horrible bone disease. You know, and he's lonely, and he's alone, and he's in this house. And I mean, it's the end of all. Even if you have all these things working for you, the end is suffering. Unless you change the nature of your being, which is, you have to know how. So anyway, Lamrim, that's the path. Its roots are in the sutras of the Buddha. So if I ask you who wrote the first Lamrim, you better say, the Buddha.
The Buddha
wrote it in the Prajnaparamita Sutras, and there's a quotation in the Prajnaparamita Sutras, which is where the word Lamrim came from. Like Marga Krama.
That's the path.
In the sutras. In the original teachings of the Buddha, 500 BC.
Okay. Written by the Buddha?
The Buddha described Lamrim. He said there are rimbas of the Lama. There's a quotation that's always used.
In the Prussian
Parliament. By the Buddha.
The Buddha wrote all
that.
He didn't
write
the Prussian.
Did he write them down, or did somebody else write them?
That's what I mean.
He spoke them, and they were written down 500 years later. But in those days, according to Buddhism, the students were so advanced, they memorized it while he spoke it. They say that we are in degenerate times. You know, we tend to think we are more advanced than people in India 500 BC who didn't have cars. But according to Buddhism, they were intellectually far ahead of us. They knew that they should be learning Dharma, and they spiritually they were much more advanced than us. They were more advanced. They could follow what he said immediately, and they could memorize it as he spoke. And
everybody in those days.
Not everybody.
They were Buddhist or not.
No, obviously not. But we say the majority of his students were. It has. If things are empty, then you have to have a certain karma to meet the Buddha. You have to be some kind of incredible being just to meet him. Like,
I think it's interesting that, you know, one of the bodhisattvas, you know, one of the downfalls of bodhisattvas is destroying towns. You know, I mean, it indicates that there's a certain level of violence that individuals
make in contact
with the Dharma.
And the kleshas are
prone to.
But the people who studied with the Buddha directly were blessed, and they had incredible faculties. Anyone who in this life could study with the Dalai Lama directly, for example, for a long period of time, he has to be some kind of incredible person himself. Okay, so that's Lamrim. There, after the Buddha taught, there were many great texts, there were many great commentaries, this whole Indian period. And then later, Atisha, who lived in the 1000 AD, he wrote a Lamrim called Light of the Path. You don't have to, I'm not going to ask you that. Okay. And then people wrote Lamrims, and the most famous one is the Lamrim Chenmo. Chenmo means big, and that was written by Tsongkhapa, Jeb Tsongkhapa. It's 1,000 pages long. It's probably the most famous book in Tibet. I'll write it over here. What steps of the path means? I don't know about stages. Stages would sort of mean to me like points that you reach. But that's not what Lamrim means. Lamrim means the steps you must take to get to that goal. Okay, so I prefer the word steps. Steps in a method. Okay, and each one is an attitude that you have to develop. Okay? It's a mental step. It's an inner attitude that you must develop, and that's what Lamri means. Do you want to turn on the water for tea?
I'm afraid to.
Too hot?
I think he's too close to.
No, I think there's a little mouse running around in here. I keep hearing him squeaking, and I don't want to burn him up or anything.
He's behind.
Huh? He's behind? It's okay?
I think it's all right.
He's been around for a while.
He's frustrated. He's very close to all this food. And he can't get through.
He's probably under the sink.
So so we'll go on for about 5 minutes while he's heating up the tea. So that's what Lamrim means. And there, how many? So if I ask you a question, how many Lamrims are there? There's many books called Lamrim. But how many Lamrims are there?
One.
Now there's each one is a Lamrim, and then most people don't understand that.
Each step is a
Lamrim. Lamki Rimba means a step of the path. So this is really plural. They should have called it steps of the path. And each one is called a Lamki Rimba. And most people don't realize that.
Each step of the Lam Rim.
Yeah, each step in the Lam Rim book is a Lamki Rimba. Is a Lam Rim. Lamki Rimba. Okay, so how to behave towards your teacher is a Lamki Rimba. Death meditation is a Lamki Rimba. Meditating about karma is a Lamki Rimba. Meditating on emptiness is a Lamki Rimba.
Why are you saying it differently than the Lamki?
It's the full form. Step of the path. Lamki Rimba. Yeah. So if most people never catch that. Most people never figure that out.
Because there's sub-steps, is that what?
This is just for them. You don't have to know this. I'm just, some people ask me this. That's the full form. Sorry. Most Tibetan loves to shorten things. Tibetan is very economic language. They like to shorten Lamki Rimba. Lamki Rimba becomes Lamri. Steps of the path.
Is he the possessor?
Yeah. So we're going to study the Lam Rim. We're going to study. It's called, by the way, not just study, but what?
Meditation.
Use as the object of our meditation for, say, the next 6 months. Okay. Every morning, burn it into your head. If you see something you can't accept, stop and do a qigong with it. It's called Yunden Shirb Juma. Yunden means a good quality. Like compassion, or understanding of emptiness, or disgust with this life. Those are all yunten. Those are yunten. If you could have those three, you'd be what we would call a talented person, or, you know.
What are those three?
Let's say understanding emptiness, compassion, and disgust with this life. And we said it before, it's not like you have to have this, suddenly you want to go stay in a cave, okay? It's just the normal vicissitudes of life. It's just the crappiness of this life that just keeps coming up over and over and over again. That we try to ignore or else we get depressed about it. It doesn't have to be, oh, I'm going to die in 70 years or something like that. It's this whole, every day is crappy. You know? And it doesn't mean you always fight with people at work or stuff like that. But the work is crappy. Where can you get? You can go up to the vice president and you die. Or somebody stabs in your back and you lose a position. Or things change and the company's out of business. Or, you know, there's no happy ending. There cannot be a happy ending. And that's just crappy. And your body's getting older and older. And you feel your energy getting worse.
Yeah.
There's no happy ending. There's no other conclusion. There's no place else to go. And that's the same with everything.
Are you happy that you got fired?
No, and then comes the day when you're unemployed. You gotta go back. Yeah. Well, you can try to turn bad situations into thinking nice about them. But basically, the whole thing is past car accidents or cancer or AIDS or... It's the life is crappy. Every day is
crappy. There's an impossible scenario, which is you go through life and you do your dharma and it all works out well in the end.
It will. It will.
After about 6 years.
You can't change it.
Neons and neons.
No. You can't change it on this life. That's the whole point. You can cause the reality to change. And you better, because you don't have any other choice.
So, Michael, what happens then? The even though everything is still crappy, it doesn't bother you anymore?
Not like that.
No.
No, remember, you're not supposed to aspire to neutrality.
No, not like that. Okay, so yin-yang means a good quality. And I'm saying that you know, a mild distaste of this life is intelligent, and that's a good quality. Shir kirma. Shir is a difficult word to translate. Shir means the basis. I've translated it as source, which is one of its meanings. Gyur means he who is, the one who is. So that, so far, means the one who is the source of all my good qualities. Where do I learn these good qualities? Okay. Ma is a feminine ending, and it's used for great books, maybe because of the connection with wisdom. For what's the greatest lama I've ever written?
Prajnaparini.
Chenmo. And mo is feminine. So jurma is the feminine ending. So the lamrim we're going to study, the lamrim you're going to use for your meditation, the lamrim which only takes 3.5 pages on a piece of paper, and you have it. That's what I handed out. It's your name, Shri Jurma. Okay. Yeah, Om. There is a sutra called Om, and the whole sutra is Om. Which, I don't remember. Okay, I'll do the first. I'll tell you who the author is, and then we'll have a break.
How would you say that whole sentence again? How would you describe
this title of our learning, the source of all my good qualities, the source of all my good. Okay. It refers to, we'll talk about it. Where does all your good qualities come from?
The lama. You're saying the lama rim is the source of all my good qualities?
No, the name of the lama rim that we're going to study, the name of the book on the path to Buddhahood which we are going to study, is called He Who Is the Source of All My Good Qualities.
So the title is only Yonten Shri, not lama rim.
No, you could put a lama rim here and it would be perfectly acceptable. They would say, the lama rim called... And it's, you can call it that. You can say Lam Rim Yin Nishin Gyur.
Is it good
so,
quality?
Or just good? I translated it as good, but it's meaning good quality. I'm not sure you can have a good quality that's not goodness. Here's the author of the Lam Rim we're going to study. Tsongkhapa. Tsongkhapa means onion county, and it was a place where he came from. And Tsongkhapa means the person from onion county. And Jay means Lord. Lord Tsongkhapa. You don't call a high lama, hey, Mosang. You know. Call him Jay Tsongkhapa. Jay means Lord. It's kind of funny to see people split it into Tong Kappa. It's like, man, happen. it means the one from Manhattan. It's like Manhattan, right? New Yorker. It's like New York. Okay, anyway, that's the person. Where did he teach that? This is an asur, which is rarely seen in Tibetan. I'll teach it to you in April. We're going to have a little alphabet class. Okay.
In the English class? We're going to have an alphabet?
No, we're going to... After these courses are finished this time, in April, we'll have a like a little alphabet class if anyone's into something. Some of the people who joined the Tibetan class didn't have enough alphabet from their last, whoever was their last teacher, so we're going to do it over again for them. So if you want to start Tibetan, you can, or if you just want to come and get abused for Tibetan, you're welcome to come. I'm not sure yet what night, we'll talk about it. Okay, say Rajang. Rajang is a very holy monastery. It's north of Phasa. It's about 100 kilometers. I believe it was found, I'm pretty sure it was founded by Dongtenje, who was the main disciple of Adichai. You don't have to know that. Dongtenje. Which means that it was founded around 1000 AD. He was the great disciple of Adichai, and he never became a monk. He was a layman with layman's vows, and he's very famous. So he's one of the greatest lamas in Tibetan history. And he helped found this monastery.
Is he still there?
I understand it, it's pretty badly damaged, but I don't know. I believe you can still visit it. Do you know?
I don't know.
And he taught, Jetsun Kapa taught this Lamrim there. Now, he would have taught it around 1400. Okay, I don't know the exact year, but if I asked you, you could say 1400. Yeah, around 1400 he taught it. We could figure out the exact date. We're working on biography, but not for me still. That's where he taught it.
Michael, he was the source of all my good qualities.
He or she.
Oh,
she, okay. Well, Geshe Lama is a woman.
That's the Lamrim Chenmo?
No. He wrote the Lamrim Chenmo.
Right.
He wrote a lot of other Lamrims. And he realized that the Lamrim Chenmo was too long. the long Lamrim was too long. So he wrote a middle Lamrim. That's about, I don't know, 120 pages. Then he wrote a short Lamrim. That's about 20 pages. Then he wrote Yunde Shigenpo, which is 3 pages. Then he wrote Lamsa Namsung, Three Principal Paths, which is 12 verses, 14 verses. So this is really the shortest full-fledged Lamrim.
So we don't have to memorize this, do we?
You should memorize
this whole thing.
You should memorize.
In a minute, for that.
When you get a tantric initiation, you're going to have to recite it quite frequently. So you might as well memorize it. You're asked to memorize it in your assignment. The thing about being a Buddhist is have all this information in your brain, because if you die, if you get an accident, if you're in a hospital, it's all available in your mind. It's very important. Not good to depend on a book. Better if it's all in your mind. It's much better. We're not used to it, but it's much better. In case you get in some emergency, it's all available to you. When you do a deep retreat, a month-long retreat, you've got all that toolkit available in your own mind. You start to get into a problem, you know exactly. You go problem number 3, doing this. You've got everything in your mind. It's much more efficient than the paper and pen. It's half the bed, and come on.
It's gotta be
long. And it's long. It's like 3 words per day. Not very long. Okay, have some questions.
Where, you know, have this theory for kinds of meditation. Where does Dzogchen fit in?
Michael, I need that information. Give me a test about the year that the monastery was founded.
No. Okay. Let me see what's on your homework. The great books of original Buddhism. These were the books that came out of early India. These are the books that all Buddhism came out of. It didn't reach every country. Not every book reached every country. Okay. These last two books, by the way, this is the order that we study them in the monastery in 18 years of course. And the first two are Mahayana, as is the last one. And These two are Hinayana. So Vinaya and Abhidhamma reach to Thailand, for example. And they study, have 40 volumes of their canon, and they have these two subjects. Do Tibetan Buddhism reject them? No. The monks' vows are straight Hinayana. And I spent 10 years studying Abhidhamma. That was the first thing the university taught us. So I would say that we study it very, very seriously. Then we go on to study the Mahayana school.
Do those countries which haven't received all the books feel about the books they didn't receive?
Different opinion. I think mostly don't know much about them. I mean, basically. If you go to Thailand and ask them, what do you think about Majjhimika?
So they say they're not
they would probably say they're not really sure about it. I don't think there's a lot of knowledge in those places about it.
You mean that the only number 3 and number 4 is in
Thailand? Yeah. And how about number 1 and number 2?
Maybe
you reached one Thai lady, I think. I think she has to take it back.
That's only Mahayana, you mean?
Yeah. And this one is Mahayana also, but some Hinayana. This is a mixture. The logic is a mixture.
But to me, I feel like it's quite the same.
I think the more you study, if you study for a long time, they are all beautiful. They join together very, very nicely. In fact, Tsongkhapa said, if you understand the scriptures well, you don't see any contradiction between them at all.
That was how I feel.
And he said, if you do, then you haven't studied enough.
Yeah. He just asked me what's the difference because I'm from Thailand and why I'm here, and I say that it's like in my country, some of the Buddhists, whatever you teach us here, somehow it's brand in the culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I met many taxi drivers. And I remember meeting a taxi driver in Thailand. He's telling me about the Buddhist. Yeah, they all know a lot.
It's just like something that you born and you learn the way it is, but they didn't say this is Buddhist. Right. It's just a way of life.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, these are the 5 great books. If you study these 5 books, you have studied the all the schools. And each school is divided up here. I'm not going to go through the whole thing. But there are 4 great schools of Indian Buddhism. We study all of them. And if you finish these 5 books, you have studied all of the great schools of Indian Buddhism, which is Buddhism. And they all relate to the Buddhist sutras. All of these came from the sutras, and you can find the places in the sutras. These are all open teachings, not secret. Then there are the secret teachings. Okay.
Michael, you said when you quoted Tsongkhapa, that's talking about scripture.
And the concepts as well.
But that's, did he read Pali scripture?
No.
Well, then how can you say that?
No.
He would accept Hinayana.
No, I would say that the Abhidharma teachings and the Vinaya teachings would cover the subjects of Pali Buddhism.
Hinayana Buddhists reject.
The Thai canon comes from the Pali canon.
Right, I know that.
So,
No, I was just thinking, how could you say that they...
They're not contradictory. Once you
so it's not that they're not contradictory, that one includes things that the other doesn't.
Of course, yeah.
So you can't... Hinayana Buddhist doesn't accept what a Mahayana Buddhist...
Well, I would say more that he hasn't learned it, or he hasn't been exposed to it. You see, I mean, what I'm saying is that if you think about... person, what do you call a Hinayana Buddhist? Say a person from a Hinayana country, and you say, come in a room and let's talk about the concepts of Mahayana. I don't think you have any problem. Abhidharma Kosha, which is the ultimate Hinayana text, it has roots of all of the things we ever study, and I can show them to you. I memorized most of it, and it's fine. It's a lack of study and a lack of knowledge, and it's some early people writing in English who had a misconception. So, once you've learned it, 5 years from now, let's talk about it. Okay, secret teaching, okay? And we're going to go through these 5. You've already been through some of them. secret teachings. What I'm trying to say, why did I draw all this up here? Not any one of these books gives you the entire Lamrim. None of them. And I can tell you because I memorized some of them and I've studied all of them.
You mean all five together?
No, any one individually.
But all five together would?
We'll talk about it. What I'm saying is that you can study any one of these five books, you can study any one of these four schools, and you can study secret Buddhism, but none of them contains all of the path. Not one of these books, and they wouldn't claim to. I mean, if you ask Chandrakirti, does it contain all of the Buddhism, he'd say no. It doesn't contain secret Buddhism. And then these other authors also. They were writing one specialty of the five subjects that you have to study. But not one of any, no one of those books covers all the points of Buddhism. The Lamrim does. The Lamrim covers the entire, all the way from the beginning up to including secret teachings. The Lamrim covers all of it.
What I know is in Thailand, the monk doesn't debate. They don't debate. I don't know about secret at all.
Good.
It
works.
I know that it's
no
secret.
No, really good. But what I'm saying is you won't find... You can study in the monastery for 18 years. And you can study... We spend 12 years on the first book. We spend 4 years on the second book. We do this all during our study for a few months a year. We do 2 years on this one and 2 years on this one. And there is no one book that contains the Lamrim. The Lamrim contains all of it.
Is there overlap between these books?
Yeah, there is some overlap.
The Lamrim, you mean the Lamrim Chenmo?
Meaning the Lamrim tradition. Any Lamrim, from Yunding to Jirma up to the Lamrim Chenmo, from 3 pages up to 1,000 pages, contains the essence and all the subject matter of these five books.
Thank you.
And that's incredible. That's what I'm trying to say is, if we were very intelligent, we studied Lamrim, you wouldn't have to study this.
Is that true of the approaches that the other traditions take?
I was going to read you guys a quotation. They're on the subject of... This is a quotation from Karma Mikye Doje, the greatest Karmapa who ever lived. Changi Chokje Gyawe Tembala Pelchen Lopa Bashi Chode Kap means I bow down and I pray the tip of the mountain of the Gandembas, which is who is Tsongkhapa, who cleaned up Buddhism and made it faultless in this snowy land where the teaching had mostly become corrupted. That's the greatest kagyu in history. And that there's a nice... I think the great leaders of all the sects, I mean, the greatest Sakya maybe was Rindala. That was Tsongkhapa, one of his main lamas. So I think once you get up to a certain level of understanding, they're all appreciating each other quite deeply. I haven't studied the Lamdre teachings of the Sakya, and I haven't studied the Dzogchen teachings of the Lama. I can't say. I can... tell you what the Lamrim is. Okay,
when you say the word secret, that's secret from whom? From non-Buddhists, non-monks? Is it secret to the individual?
Secret to anyone who hasn't received permission to study and hasn't received an initiation that allows them to study.
That's what Tantra
means? You come across them and you haven't gotten the permission.
They say your head cracks up. I'll tell you what happens. At the worst, it's boring and you don't read it very long. At a medium, you try something inside it, not knowing what you're doing, and you go to hell. And in the very worst, I would say, you read it, you try it, and nothing happens. Because you don't really know what you're doing. And then you just think it's, you take 10 initiations and you fool around, you don't do your dharma, you don't do your sangha every day, and you slowly stop doing it. And no one ever teaches you what you committed yourself to. You can't tell me 3 of the vows of the 20 vows you took or 30 vows you took. And it becomes a disaster. And then the worst thing, I think the most horrible thing that can happen is that nothing happens. And you just lose your faith in those teachings. And you say, oh, Joe Schmo's doing another tantric initiation this weekend. Let's fly over there and take another one, And nothing happens in your life. You don't get any tantric results. And I think that would be the biggest karma of all. I think that would be the worst possible scenario, is that you fool around with it for a while. You don't know what you're doing. You never received any good teachings about it. You take an initiation. You don't keep the commitments well. You get bored after a while and you stop doing it. And then in the back of your mind, you're thinking, this doesn't really do anything.
So what impact is the secret? Like, can you become an accomplished Buddhist with no tantric?
You can't achieve Buddhahood in one life without secret teaching. With tantra, you can. That's the idea of tantra. Very powerful, very dangerous.
Well, it said you can't attain Buddhahood without tantra.
You can't attain... No, you can... 76... 760,000 great eons, something like that. Okay. Okay, anyway, what I'm trying to say is that having been through the whole course, knowing the whole course, I believe what they say in the Lama, which is that it contains all of it, and no one but contains it. So if you, what I'm saying is, Yunnan Shigyuma, if you could really understand these three pages, you don't have to go through the other books. It's worth it to meditate on it. You still should go through the other books, but... what I'm saying is that powerful. It's that powerful.
Okay. For instance, in Tibet, would the Lama Rinpoche be universally used or recognized by all the different
youth of history? Come up at Nikyu Dorje, and they have spread it and praised it. But each tradition has its own.
So in other words, you'd be able to sort of recognize the Chulalongkorn Lamrim as opposed to a Kagyupa Lamrim if you were so, you know, skilled enough. It's a different flavor.
It would be a Lamrim if it had, if the Lamde, for example, of the Sakya, if it contains all the necessary parts, then it's a Lamrim.
I understand that, but I'm saying, would they be then take different angles of approach for the different points, for instance?
The main elements would be the same.
Yeah.
It might be a different order or a different group. Okay.
When you have, like, say, to sort of, I don't know what you call it, lectures and initiations, usually what happens is you get to know, especially as Westerners, we don't know a lot of this stuff. They give you an introduction of what it is about, then everybody takes initiation. It's like, you feel like if you don't take it, it's an insult to the law.
I know. You're putting a bad, you know,
yeah.
No, it's true.
And I've never seen anybody not sitting down and not taking an initiation.
No, that's why you go.
Yeah, but what you're implying here is you're supposed to know what you're doing first before you take the initiation. And how can you make a decision before you know it?
Get a lot of training, and then you get some description, rough descriptions of it. They're not allowed to describe it to you in detail before you take the initiation. That's true. But they give you... good training in the Tumoi Lam. What's that? Tumoluk? No, it's the in common, the path which is shared by Master and Teacher. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it more. We have to. In fact. Okay. I'm going to switch to English. These are the four parts to this Lam Rim. These are the four great divisions of this Lam Rim. Of this 3.5 page lamrim. You got 8 pages because I put English into them.
Only this lamrim or all lamrim?
This particular lamrim is divided into these. Actually, all of them are basically the first two are the normal great division of any lamrim.
What are they again? The four great?
The four big chapters, the four big parts that we're going to study. All lamrims are divided into the first two. They give equal weight to two things. What are they? The first two. Finding a teacher, the right teacher, and how to behave with him, and then all your other practice. Those are the two great divisions of any lamrim. Finding a teacher and how to behave with him. How to live with him. And then, secondly, and this verb is very difficult, the word I call taking a lama. You can call relying on a lama, you can call behavior with your lama. There's many ways to translate. It's very difficult. It's the verb for what you do with a medicine when you get sick. It's the verb for what you do with a shovel when you're digging. You use it, or you take yourself to that instrument to accomplish the goal you want to reach. It's a very difficult word to translate.
So the first one is taking, being with the Lama?
It's your lifetime relationship with this Lama, really. How do you find him? What should he be like? How should you behave after you've decided? All those things. Who is he?
And the one.
Once you found him, now how to practice. Okay. What to do. Okay, this one has... You all right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry it's late and it's hot and you went to work today. And
so did I.
I'll try to finish this. We're doing good. How much time is it? Okay, we'll finish in 4 minutes. Now we're almost there. We're almost pretty close. Okay. This is going to have... Let's say it'll have A and B.
Is all part one? Division one?
Yeah, division one is going to have 2 parts. The four I'm talking about.
Four?
What? Yeah. If it says one of the 4 steps to taking your lama, taking a lama, finding a lama, serving a lama, then there are these 4. 1, 2, 3, 4.
So how do you develop it? What's that
work? We talk about it. First, I'm going to give you a list of what makes a teacher qualified. We went through this, We went through 10 before. I'm going to give you a different list just for variety. I'll read the 10 to you. You don't have to write them, okay? We have this in the first course. These are from the tenure. These are the classical qualities that a good lama should have. A person that you trust to fool around with your spirit and mind. Okay? That's a grave responsibility. Right? you're allowing that person to... You're exposing your mind to this influence. And your mind is not a solid thing. Your mind is a plastic thing. Whatever he says or does can affect your mind. So you have to be careful who you expose it to. He should have the following qualities, which are written by Maitreya. Okay? Pretty decent source.
This is the 10 we don't have to write down? Or
you do not have to write this down. If you don't want to know what he should have. We had this 10 before. All the people who were in the last course had this 10. He should be Dulwa. Dulwa means... He should be practicing his morality. Okay. 10 moralities. No killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, lying, slander, harsh words, idle gossip, no craving, ill will, or wrongdoing. Shouldn't have those. Okay. Should be Shiva. Shiva means he should have mastered concentration, meditation. Nyerva Shiva, he should have mastered wisdom. He should understand emptiness well. Or perceived it directly.
Yeah.
Still number 2? We're on 4 now. Those are the first 3. Basically the first 3 trainings. The 3 trainings. Morality, concentration, and wisdom. Loma le yunden hapa. He should have qualities that are... He should be further along than the students he's trying to teach. Sundur chembo bangdenba. He should... be willing to make great efforts on behalf of his students. Okay. He should be willing to work hard for his students. Nungi yinden pumpun sopan nawa. He should understand the scriptures perfectly. Dekona ni topa. He should have perceived emptiness.
Said that already.
So
the
yeah,
first
did.
One was intellectual event.
Yeah, remember
received
that.
Emptiness or understand.
Yeah, we talked about that.
They're together and the
rest
we
learn. No, it was the third. You're talking about the third training, which is wisdom. Wisdom can be also towards other subjects. You can have wisdom towards dependent origination, things like that.
Should understand the scriptures completely.
It says Puntum Tsongpa. You know Puntum. He's that monk. It means, you know, total.
So it's got this qualification, or at least that he doesn't have to have perceived emptiness.
This book says perceived emptiness. No, directly it doesn't say.
You can't question somebody about that. So you have to go, okay?
I would say listen to his description of emptiness, and if they are totally internally consistent, A. B, if they are consistent with what you've understood or heard about emptiness. You know? B. C, if it leads you to some perception of emptiness. That's pretty good. You know, then you can say you probably understand. You've probably seen emptiness. Okay. Chimbawa La Kepa, you should be a skillful teacher, good teacher. He should love his students. He should have some concern for his students. He shouldn't get tired no matter how many times you have to teach something. No, inexhaustible. Okay. Doesn't get tired of teaching. 간단님의 뉴스 대탐제 차원에 가나. And because now in the age of degeneration, it's extremely difficult to find anyone who has all these qualities, Jay Lame, Tsongkhapa said, I'll give you five qualities. These could be on your homework.
All we need to know.
Five qualities, that's much.
This is still under A, right, Marshall?
Yeah, if he doesn't have all 10, Tsongkhapa says, you know, who can you find in these days who has these 10 qualities? So this was in 1400, okay? In Tibet. He says at least it should be a person who is controlling himself with the three trainings, meaning morality, concentration, and wisdom. Morality, meditative, concentration, and wisdom. Should be a person who has become, I don't know, kinder and gentler through his practice of those three trainings. He somehow got control over his being with those three trainings. Morality, meditation or concentration, and wisdom. So how many we got? We got three, okay. Those are the first three. The first three are the same, right? The first three are the same. In number four, it says, Deni Topa, is perceived emptiness. Remember, it does not have to be directly. It could be intellectually. He doesn't say the word directly. When he says he's perceived emptiness, it could have been, there is no substitute for a teacher who has perceived emptiness directly. He has seen truths that no one else can see. But if you can't find one, it's okay if he just understands intellectually all the books about emptiness.
So, excuse me, what is number three? Yeah.
The training of wisdom.
And so isn't that intellectually understanding?
We just answered that. We said it doesn't have to be. Wisdom can be focused towards karma. You can be wise about how karma works. You can be wise about how dependent origination works.
That's not how we define the
train. Wisdom can be directed towards many other things.
And so then the next one, number four, is emptiness, either
specifically
or directly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's specifically. And the fifth one, he says, Sewa Dangamba. He loves the students. He has concern for the students, love for the students. That's a five. Mata Mataya. Matamatayam. Minimum. He's going to give another five. Okay? We're getting. Now, I gave you so far, I gave you 10 qualities of a good teacher, and I said you don't have to learn them. Then I gave you 5 qualities, which you do have to know. Now I'm going to give you another 5, because it's hard to find anyone who has the first 5.
So we have to know the bare minimum.
Matayam.
5 equals 10, and you're back to reading.
Yeah. As far as memorizing for your quiz, right. He doesn't say that. It could be
This is all from Pabanka's commentary, so it could be Pabanka.
Yeah, with Tibetan, you don't have quotation marks, so you're not quite sure where it's any. It looks to, feels to me like Pabanka's talking again, but I'm not sure. Could be some Kappa. We can look it up in the computer. Matayang, Matayang, at the very, very, very least. Okay. And I like this. I like the one he said next. Chodan, Jigden Nile, Chutso or Chepa. In the great division between worldly activities and Dharma activities, he is mainly working with Dharma. Remember, Jigden, worldly in Buddhism is a tricky word. It doesn't refer to what you do for a living. We just had an example of Gomtun Jay, who never became a monk. Okay. Worldly is an attitude.
Can you say that again, please?
Worldliness is an attitude. You never know who's worldly and who's not from what they're doing.
So the division between worldly attitude
and
dharma attitude
is inner.
It doesn't matter what they're doing.
Absolutely, it doesn't matter what you're doing outside.
Yeah.
Activity too. Okay. Being kind at work is a dharma activity.
Right, but was the word that was used activity or attitude?
He just says the world or the dharma. Is he devoted to the world or is he devoted to the Dharma? How about that? Should be a person who's devoted mainly to the Dharma.
51% at least.
Yeah, of his life, of his mental life.
Being of his mind. Yeah. Or her.
It appears to be.
Between this life and the future life, he's working mainly for the future life.
This is number two.
In the division between this life and future life, he's devoted himself to the future life. He's working mainly for his future life. He's worried more about his death and his future life than about this life. By the way, that doesn't mean you just ignore this life. It doesn't mean that. This life in Tibetan has a connotation of worldly life. Okay? You should know that. Alright. Between watching out for himself and watching out for others, he mainly watches out for others. Mainly worried about taking care of others rather than himself. Or herself.
I don't quite follow the second point that you're saying. So you're saying it doesn't refer to the external in terms of him working towards future life versus this life. You're saying he is working towards his...
What I'm saying is his mind is focused on his future life.
Even
but it doesn't mean he says, it goes up to see some suffering in this life, for instance, I don't need to help you, I'm focusing on my life. It's not like that. Or he just gives up everything and goes sit in a cave and try to collect some good for his future life. It's sentient beings, it's the beings around you that you need to make any progress. Without people around you, you can't make much progress.
Could you repeat the last one?
The last one was, if he has a choice between taking care of himself or taking care of others, he mainly takes care of others. He takes care of others first. Gosum Bhagmedam Itala. He is not careless in his physical, verbal, or mental actions. Maybe they're more difficult than the ones.
What was that again?
He's not careless in his physical, verbal, or mental. What did I say?
Actions.
He thinks before he talks. He thinks before he thinks. He thinks before he does anything. He's very careful about not to do anything wrong in those things.
What are the three things in physical and mental?
And physical, verbal, and mental. Body, speech, and mind.
Actions,
yeah. He doesn't teach his students a wrong path. Number five.
Are those, please take questions?
could be.
Tell me.
Last thing I'll say, and then we'll quit. And we'll have to talk about this a little bit more next week, but next class. But the main thing is, all throughout this text, if you read the English, it's saying, bless me, bless me, bless me, bless me. What does it mean in Tibetan? Chin lam. What does it mean? Someone asks you on the homework. No, you're supposed to sit there and go, bless me, bless me, bless me, please bless me. What does it mean, bless you?
Change
your Dharma aptitude. Change my ability to practice Dharma. Please change my ability to practice Dharma. That's what blessing means.
Michael, is that through providing the condition for learning by being there to teach somebody?
Partly. But what it's saying is, you know, you go into a Dharma teaching and half the people fall asleep and half the people are kind of interested, and maybe two or three people in the Madhyamika, it says you get goosebumps. When you hear somebody say, there's a beautiful quote in this one today, he says, what does it say? It said, the sun doesn't feel like it's his painful obligation to shine on the world. And the earth doesn't feel like it's his painful obligation to hold up everybody. And the bodhisattva doesn't feel like it's his... No, it was a different one, I'm sorry. A hungry cow when he runs into a big patch of grass. No, there were two beautiful ones. A hungry cow when he... Oh, the first one, if you want to know the ending, it was a bodhisattva doesn't... No, it was... Anyway... When a cow runs into a big clump of grass and he's really hungry, he goes for it. And when a thirsty person gets a big glass of ice water, he drinks it down. And when a bodhisattva gets a chance to do something for somebody else, even at his own expense, he goes for it. He gets thrilled by it. So I think that's the last person in the Dharma class. You know, he thinks it's the most amazing thing you ever heard, and he just immediately he takes it home and he starts doing something about it. And immediately it makes his way into his heart. And he changes it. That very night he goes home and starts doing something differently the next day. That's a jinma. And that's a difference in your sensitivity to Dharma. You know, to having someone say something and then you go home immediately and you start... It affects you that you start to change. You start to actually change. And you start to actually do all those resolutions that you made, but haven't. You know, what's the opposite? We know that state very well. It's continue to have the same problems you had last year, and continue to get as irritated as you did last year, and continue to be as jealous of people as you were last year. And I have that. I read my confessions from 5 years ago. And I found a letter to my mother before she died. I never mailed it because she died. It was unopened. I opened it up. It's from Damsala. And I had the same problems then, 20 years ago. You know. So, Jinlap means don't make me like that. You know, let me at least find some ability to change.
Mike, what's the difference between that and receiving inspiration? Or please inspire me, you know.
I guess those are the same translations. And I'm just saying, know what it really means.
Well, I mean, are you saying it doesn't mean
No. It means to inspiro. Change your spirit.
What is it?
Oh, yeah. This chart explains all the 5 problems. It explains all the 8 antidotes. And it explains the 9 levels in a picture. And we can go over it sometime.
We won't have it with us next time.
Well, we can make a night if you want to come, and we'll sit around and have tea on the floor and do it. But basically, here it says, the elephant is your mind. The fact that he's colored black is to represent dullness, chingwa. The monkey is that troa. It's any distraction of the mind. Remember, there were 3. Virtuous object, pleasant object. No. Did I do the right thing?
Yeah.
Okay. And the fact that he's black represents what? The monkey.
Agitation.
This is mental state number two. He's reached each curve represents a different one of the nine. The monk here has reached Gyunda Jopa, the ability to put his mind on the object for a macaroni. Okay. And here the elephant, his head has started to change white. That means the increasing of his Selcha and Necha, of his fixation and his clarity, starting to get clear. These five symbols, the mirror represents form, beautiful shapes and colors. The symbols represent music. This cloth represents silk. And these are the objects of the senses, which are enemies to meditation. So they're hanging around the path. And like that, we can go through. Up here is bodily agility. He's flying. this is mental agility. He's deep in meditation. This is the accomplishment of shamatha. Right? Everything's white. And like that.
You see, each curve is a state. There's only five curves.
You're right. There's a state between each curve. So here's 7, 8, 9, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And I like, this is a lot of times I see materials that I don't like, or they're not accurate, or they're not quite. This one is good. This one was well done. I don't know. This was done, this is an old, old system. I don't know who invented it. I think it's a very old custom.
Do you have to buy an elephant, or can you rent one?
We all have a chingwa.
Sasi bhagi jasi metta sham viravin shinyande yampadi sange shindu mitte huwagi jogunanda shimba
Class 8.